Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Crashing your bike is inevitable. No riders follow the rules.
We take a ride down the Angeles Crest Highway where speed freaks and commuters alike drive one of the most dangerous roads in Los Angeles. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. I'm Ani Ukar. Most people can agree that getting a pay raise is a good thing, but raising the wages for thousands of people at a time can be complicated. As Catherine Davis reports, a new proposal to raise the wages of LA's hotel workers is stirring up debate at City Hall.
Guadalupe Mora works at a Hyatt Regency Hotel in Los Angeles, and Mora likes her work.
I love it. I love it because I get to know a lot of people from everywhere.
But like any job, Mora's has its drawbacks. She does a lot of heavy lifting and she works long hours, but Mora's biggest concern is money. She makes about $8 an hour, and Mora, a mother of four, would really like to get a raise.
Well, if I have that extra money, I don't have a house, so that's my priority right now, buy a house.
Mora paid a visit to City Hall today in support of a new proposal to raise the wages for employees of hotels with more than 100 rooms in LA. The new proposed wage is $15.37 per hour. That's a similar rate to one established in the recent LA World Airports Living Wage Ordinance and a hotel worker wage ordinance passed by the city of Long Beach.
They can't save for the future, they can't save for their homes, and they can't spend enough time with their family.
That's City Councilwoman Nuria Martinez. Together with Councilman Curran Price Jr. and Mike Bonin, she raised the motion at today's City Council meeting. Speaking outside City Hall, Bonin said hotel workers are a good target for the wage effort because tourism in the city has been doing so well.
Our hotels here in Los Angeles boast an occupancy rate of 75.4%, which is far better than the national average.
And city council members say that with 43% of LA's hotel workers living below the poverty line, letting hotel workers share the wealth of a booming tourism industry is just the right thing to do. But Ruben Gonzalez of the Los Angeles Area Chamber of Commerce worries this motion could hinder the growth of the city's hotel businesses.
Does it make sense to set a wage in the city of LA when right next door in other cities they're going by a lower wage, which creates a competitive disadvantage for hotels or any other industry?
Gonzalez agrees that a minimum wage discussion is worthwhile if done in the right way, but he isn't convinced that wages are the only thing this proposal is really about.
Despite the great rhetoric here, this is really not about raising wages for hotel workers. This is really about creating leverage to help hotel unions organize non-union hotels.
Like the LA Area Chamber of Commerce, the Hotel Association of Los Angeles also worries about the impact of this motion. The association issued a statement saying the price of higher wages could be lost jobs. But Councilman Bonin is confident the proposal will have a broader impact in boosting the city's economy.
This is about the ripple impact that this will have on the economy. This is about the corner bakery. This is about the neighborhood auto body shop. This is about the neighborhood clothing store. This is about growing the economy in Los Angeles.
The actual effect of the proposal is soon to be investigated. The next step in City Council's process will be to do a study on the potential impact of the wage hike. Then the city would go through committees, hearings, discussions, and amendment processes before it came back to City Council for final approval. Guadalupe Mora knows all that could take a long time, but she and her five-year-old son are crossing their fingers it eventually becomes a reality.
Thank you. Big house.
Yes, a big house.
If the proposal makes it through City Council's approval process, as many as 11,000 workers could benefit. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA Police Commission is taking a look at excessive force. The commission said today they will begin reviewing an officer's actions prior to shootings. Joey Wong has more.
The commission is trying to determine whether the police officer's actions can incite the use of excessive force. LAPD spokesman Andrew Smith says the commission will be examining three areas to determine whether the police actions escalated tensions.
The three things that we look at in every use of force are tactics, the officer's actions that led up to the use of force, drawing and exhibiting, which means drawing and exhibiting the firearm. And then third part is finally the actual use of force itself. And that gets judged on whether it's reasonable based on the totality of the circumstances.
The commission insists that this is not a major change to their review policy, but rather a clarification after complaints of the use of excessive force. LAPD Police Chief Charlie Beck says that interactions between the police and the public can sometimes prompt the police to shoot.
It goes much further than just a series of mistakes. You know, the mistakes have to be absolutely tied to the decision to shoot. You know, it's not just could they handle a call better, or could they have interacted more completely with some other resources or things like that. It has to have a direct nexus to the use of force, and that's the way we've always looked at them, and that's really not a change.
Beck says this review will not affect officers' day-to-day activities. The LAPD's use of force has been a hot topic, especially since the police commission found 8 officers violated policy when they fired at 2 women during the manhunt for Christopher Dorner. The 2 women were delivering newspapers. Joey Wong, Annenberg Radio News.
LA residents say there may be something rotten in their local grocery stores. Andy Vasoyan takes a look.
Protesters in East Los Angeles are filing a complaint against El Supermarket chain of grocery stores. Isela Gracian is vice president of operations for the East LA Community Corporation.
We have found that they have products that they've been selling that's past their due dates that is, you know, high potential for being unsafe for consumers.
Gracian wants the chain to make changes in the way it does business.
We would want the El Superstores to immediately stop the practice of selling products that are past their due dates, as well as ensuring that there's a quality work environment for all of their workers.
Access to quality food is an issue for every low-income neighborhood in Los Angeles. Mark Valiantos, professor of urban and environmental policy at Occidental University, spoke about the discrepancy in grocery stores.
There are fewer full-service supermarkets and fewer farmers markets in lower-income areas than in more affluent areas. We did some research that showed that there were 3 times as many grocery stores in upper income and white areas as in lower income and predominantly African-American areas, for example.
The community group has sent a letter to El Super's parent company, Bodega Latina Corp., and to the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. El Super did not return phone calls for comment. Andy Vasoyan, Annenberg Radio News.
The 405 freeway officially reopened today, ending Jamzilla, the freeway shutdown over the President's Day weekend. Christina Savan reports.
The 405 now has 2 extra lanes. We spoke to Paul Gonzalez, a spokesperson for the Metro. He said that because of advance warnings, traffic was not as bad as they had feared.
Jamzilla ended as a complete success for the construction crews, for Caltrans, and for Metro. We're able to tackle the work being done in a 5.6-mile segment of the 405 through the Sepulveda Pass. And part of that was working on the center line. We had to move it 20 feet to the west so we could make room for the future carpool lane that'll be there.
Gonzalez also shared future freeway closure plans.
Well, this is the last event of this magnitude. Later on, maybe in a couple of months or so, there will be another closure to work on the southbound side of the 405, but it will not be as extensive as Jamzilla was.
So drivers, listen up, because now might be a good time to start figuring out an alternative route for your future southbound drive. Christina Savan, Annenberg Radio News.
Now let's see what's in store for the weather. Looks like we're going to cool down to a low of 51 degrees tonight, but we'll pick back up to the mid-70s tomorrow, and we'll break into the low 80s on Thursday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I take a look at Facebook's 50-plus new gender options, and we see why standardized tests might not be giving a passing grade. Sharing the road in Los Angeles is like the battle of the bulges in the car-dependent population, and the rising trend of biking in LA has only increased the tension of space for rubber on the road. Somehow, one of the most treacherous highways in LA is making it work. Denise Guerra reports.
Driving up the Angeles Crest Highway, or Highway 2, can be a terrifying experience for the first timer. On a Sunday afternoon, I decided to take the challenge.
So a cyclist is up ahead of me. A car just passed me, so I'm going to go past the double yellow line. There's a little exit here. Let this car pass.
It's a playground for motorcycles, cars, and cyclists who can all agree.
Beautiful scenery.
Scenery is spectacular.
Very scenic, beautiful.
The scenic mountain vistas can be an easy distraction for the snaking 90-degree bends that make up one of the most dangerous highways in Los Angeles. Located near La Cañada Flint Ridge, the 66-mile roadway can reach an elevation of 7,000 feet as you head up the Angeles National Forest. And it's this challenge that makes it a popular place for the different types of vehicles to have to share the road. Cyclists, who go an average of 6 to 14 miles per hour, use the steep elevation to work out their legs and lungs. Cars take the road either as a shortcut into Los Angeles or to reach the ski lifts and hiking trails up the mountain. And for motorcyclists like Mark De La Cruz, it's a playground to test your skills.
You have to accept the fact that crashing your bike is inevitable. No riders follow the rules. Everybody is passing the cars in front of them, passing the cyclist, passing the double solid yellow line.
From a cyclist perspective, Highway 2, I personally feel like, is a safe place to ride.
That's Adam Masters, a pro cyclist and bike enthusiast.
Coming down Highway 2, most cyclists just take the whole lane. We're traveling anywhere from 30 to 40 miles an hour.
Angeles Crest is a two-lane highway, meaning one lane for going up and going down. And being squeezed between a rock and a hard place is quite literal up here. Mountain rock and gravel on one side, 100-foot cliffs on the other. Accidents are a common occurrence for the careless driver, with an average of 1 to 2 fatalities every year, including suicides. In 2001, the highway made headlines with 5 fatalities within weeks of each other. A Caltrans investigation found that the cause of death came from drivers who were either speeding or under the influence. Caltrans spokeswoman Kathy Markham says that the responsibility to keep safe on the highway is on everyone.
A lot of people really love this highway, and the best course of action is, you know, just look out for each other. If you see a biker, make sure that they have plenty of room, drive carefully, and certainly if you're on a motorcycle or in a fast car, don't feel like this is the kind of highway where you are going to test your limits. That's always a bad idea.
Sharing the road can be a struggle for similar roadways in Los Angeles that offer the same thrill as Angeles Crest. This includes the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu and Mulholland Drive, which has become notorious after a YouTube video surfaced of a motorcyclist crashing head-on into a cyclist. Near the top of the highway is Newcomb's Ranch, a popular restaurant and bar for travelers taking the two. Here I'm at Jim B.
If you're the slow traffic, you need to be courteous and let faster traffic go by. We get a big ticket if we go over the double yellow line, so I don't go over the double yellow line. I sit behind the slow-moving traffic. But there's pullouts all the way down the road where you can pull over, let the traffic go by, and everybody's happy. If you're not courteous, then people do stupid things.
And for people like him who take the highway regularly, enjoying the road and keeping safe means just one thing. Be courteous. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
There's a rift within the Buddhist community, and it's expected to play out this week when the Dalai Lama visits the Bay Area in Los Angeles. Protesters say they will be out in force at every stop of the Dalai Lama's speaking tour. Kylie Morgan reports on what the conflict is all about.
The controversy involves a Buddhist sect that believes in praying to the deity Dorje Shugden. The Dalai Lama believes this deity is not sufficiently enlightened to be worthy of Buddhist prayer.
My name is Lizette Zalari. I'm just part of the media team. It would be like the equivalent of Obama perhaps saying, right, Catholics cannot pray to Mother Mary anymore. And it's like, why?
He claims that their prayers are a danger to his life and threaten to divide the Tibetan Buddhist community. The Dalai Lama said he prayed to the deity himself when he was younger, but has since abandoned the practice.
It causes mass confusion, and then many people who aren't quite so committed then hate the people who are committed, and then this separation has begun.
Shugden Buddhists have been banned from many public institutions, including shops and medical facilities in Tibetan communities in India. In 2008, the Dalai Lama urged his followers to expel Shugden Buddhists from all monasteries during a speech at a Tibetan university in India. Kylie Morgan, Annenberg Radio News.
Two former members of the band Pussy Riot are free now after police briefly detained them in Sochi, Russia today. Michaela Wickham tells us why they are speaking out against the Russian government.
Police held Maria Aliakhina and Nadezhda Tolokonakova as suspects in a theft case at the Hotel Adler in Sochi, Russia. Tolokonakova's husband told reporters authorities beat the women. She went on to tweet, "They dragged me on the floor in the hall of the department, hands tied behind back and thrown to the floor." The women were in Sochi to protest what they call a lack of free speech. They were walking down the street speaking to journalists and activists when officials took them away for questioning. Pussy Riot is a feminist band that has brought controversy because of its criticism of President Vladimir Putin and Russian laws. The former band members were released from prison just before the Olympic Games kicked off in Russia. They spent nearly 2 years in prison. The two were convicted of hooliganism and inciting religious hatred. What got them in prison is a song entitled Punk Prayer, and they performed it in a church. They were defiant after being released today, saying, "Putin will teach you to love the motherland." Michaela Wickham, Annenberg Radio News.
If you haven't heard by now, Facebook is now offering over 50 gender options for its users to choose from. The change comes in response to petitions created by Facebook users who felt they couldn't accurately express who they were on the social media platform. The new list of options was developed with the help of GLAAD, a major LGBT advocacy group. Earlier, I spoke with Rich Ferraro, Vice President of Communications at GLAAD, to learn more about this new feature.
We've been working with Facebook on a range of issues related to safety and privacy for LGBT users for several years. Facebook, like so many brands, schools, and media outlets today, really has made LGBT inclusion a priority, and I think that's what you're seeing with this latest news. GLAAD provided suggestions to Facebook that gender nonconforming and transgender young people often use to develop their list of gender options, but it's my understanding that Facebook will be listening to user feedback from people in these communities to make sure that list is accurate and inclusive.
I know you mentioned some privacy concerns. What are some of the issues these type of community members have to face or deal with?
The latest report from GLSEN, which is an organization that works on behalf of LGBT young people, shows that we're living in a world where nearly half of LGBT youth report being harassed or bullied online. Sadly, in many places in America, it's not safe to be out and proud about who you are. So Facebook has created privacy settings around this field for users who might want their friends to know who their authentic selves are, but might not want their employers or their teachers or even their parents to know.
Even though we are in the year 2014, I feel there's still a lot of people who don't understand what much of this means. Do you mind explaining it in very simple terms, maybe what the difference is between sexuality and gender, or just what it is that makes gender so important to identify?
Sure. Sexual orientation is who you love, and gender identity is who you are. Not everyone fits into a box of male or female, and Facebook has broken new ground by making the platform inclusive and giving users the ability to tell their own story in their own words on Facebook. And this is not about the percentage of the user base who will not use this feature, but it's about the people who needed it, who felt obstacles of discrimination, violence, lack of understanding, and really deserve to be able to tell their own story in their own words on Facebook.
What should people know about the differences between these options?
I don't think you need to understand every single term on the list to understand what it means for LGBT youth to feel accepted and included. I think last week's announcement was received very well by the transgender community and the gender nonconforming communities, but that list is a work in progress, so you might see it expand.
Is there any other impact you think this may have on the transgender and gender nonconforming community members?
I think that these are populations in our country that are really underrepresented and almost invisible. Last week, for one of the first times, mainstream news outlets like CNN and MSNBC and the Associated Press were talking about gender nonconforming and transgender young people and saying that they existed and that they were supported by one of our country's biggest brands and most innovative brands. I think you're going to see other corporations, other schools, and other media outlets start to pay attention to this community who, before last week, were relatively and sadly invisible.
That was Rich Ferraro, Vice President of Communications at GLAAD, talking to us about the new Facebook gender options. Middle schoolers in Highland Park are exploring their neighborhood and their heritage with music recorded almost a century ago. In the second installment of a two-part series, arts and culture reporter Jennifer Velez explains the effect of those wax recordings have had on the young listeners.
After learning about the collection, David, one of the eighth graders, felt like he could connect to it.
I feel that it's very good that those people spoke Spanish, because it represents more for us, the Latinos. It's also very pretty big, the collection. He has a lot of collections, different type of collections, and every single one represents about the old times and things that right now exist. Sometimes they do remind me of my culture. Sometimes they say stories about like myths and all that, and that reminds me about some old stories.
Esperanza, Noelle, and Vincent share some of their thoughts on Blanca Paloma, one of the recordings from the collection.
It was very passionate. The lyrics that they had in them had a meaning to each word. Also, the way that they sang the song, the vocals that they had, it sounded passionate. I think it sounds from one of those old, back in the old day movies from Mexico that they were seeing or describing their feelings to a person or what they feel.
I think that the song it sounds like like Esperanza said, it sounds like the old movies that they used to play, and some of the other songs that they used to play back then too.
I think I'd still have to agree with Esperanza that it sounds like an old-timey movie, in the static playing in the background and the lyrics, the way they're expressing all these feelings people have for each other.
Vincent also talked to me about the way the wax cylinder, the tool is used to record the songs, worked.
The wax cylinder is like a phonograph. It's before you record with it, it's just a smooth wax pipe, and you spin it, I believe, and it will just, a needle will vibrate according to the sounds it's picking up and making indentations in the cylinder, like vinyl almost.
This is Ms. Griffith, the eighth grade teacher.
Our school is really fortunate to be able to serve a vast diversity of students. It's amazing the difference that I see in them from the beginning of the year until the end, the confidence that they gain and the public speaking ability that they develop from being able to talk in front of large groups of students. We're really grateful. I'm really grateful as a teacher that we do have community partners. And for our school, we have the Autry and then the Audubon Center. and that they're able to take and willing to take such an interest in the kids and helping to nurture and grow these children. They will never forget this program.
I really like how they teach us about the natives and how Mexico won independence and the Rancho period and how it ended. It makes me feel very impressive and very happy that I see that someone follows the culture that we now follow, and that there was someone before that lived and that are helping us bring back cultures that are dead right now.
I think of the Casa as a place of great meaning for Spanish history, because it symbolizes everything that Mexicans went through throughout the over time here in America.
Jennifer Velez for Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
We are at the LA Zoo. I come for the walk. I really enjoy the environment. I like getting out and having a nice nature walk. And my son comes for the animals.
My favorite animal is a tiger and it's koalas.
He gets really excited about coming here. And it doesn't really matter to him what he sees. Such a pleasure to see him get so excited. It's really nice.
Sonic City! Every college-bound high school student stresses about how well they do on the SATs. But contrary to popular belief, one study has found that the dreaded S standardized test may not be the best indicator of college success. Alexis Mason has more.
The National Association for College Admission Counseling says colleges shouldn't worry about SAT and ACT scores. The study found there is little correlation between standardized test scores and college performance. Bill Hiss led the three-year study.
Essentially what we found was that there are no differences in either cumulative GPA in college or in graduation rates between the submitters and the non-submitters.
Over two-thirds of four-year universities require standardized test submissions. Hiss does not recommend doing away with them altogether.
Several reporters today have asked me, should we just abandon SATs? And I wouldn't go that far. It's not that the SATs or the ACTs have no predictive value. It is that we don't find them to be evenly predictive or reliably predictive across populations.
Hiss believes low SAT scores may dissuade students from applying to certain colleges.
The students simply don't apply to your institution in the first place because they think their tests are too low, even though they would be successful if you would let them in and give them a chance.
He believes a reliable predictor of college success is the student's high school GPA. Alexis Mason, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with ATVN's Ben Capinos to see what's coming up on ATVN Trojan Vision tonight at 6.
Well, the death toll continues to rise in Kyiv. At least 19 are dead as the country is torn between its ties with Russia and the European Union. Tonight on ATVN, we've got international relations experts discussing how the violence in Eastern Europe will impact us here in America.
Definitely be looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Ben. That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Sean Birch. Our production assistant is Lexi McAvinci. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is Andy Vasoyan. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ani Ukar.